You're listening to Mark Langley Horsemanship Podcast. I'm Jenny Barnes.
And I'm Mark Langley.
Mark, I've got some questions from our members today that have come through. Justine is after some exercise and good horsemanship. Many horses need exercise for weight or rehab reasons. Horsemanship involves great timing and being precise. This usually means getting it right at the walk, with perhaps a few trot transitions. How then can you practice good horsemanship and really exercise that horse? Lunging is great, but to do it properly without ever driving the horse away takes a great deal of time. If that horse needs 40 minutes of brisk exercise 5 times a week for health reasons, and you can only lunge or ride in the arena, and you haven't mastered perfect lunging, what is the best way to go about this exercise?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I've thought of that often, and I've also had people, when they're lunging, their horses, sort of, you know, at clinics, think of the same thing and ask me the same sort of question or similar question. Now, the interesting thing, what you're saying is, horsemanship is a conversation with a horse, and it's constant. Searching thought changes and interactions that we're having with our horses. So when you're looking at sending your horse to exercise for 40 minutes around on a circle, I wouldn't be so concerned about the driving side of it, in the sense that, well, I'm not saying drive your horse out and chase it around on the circle, but what I'm saying is it's the 40 minutes of going around mindlessly that will, with you standing somewhere in the middle, that would teach a horse just to sort of zone out and tap out from that conversation. Because in horse training, there's everything has a purpose for the horse in a sense, until you've got that really good connection. But a 40 minute exercise is a long time for a horse to hold a connection without some sort of dialect or conversation going on. So what I would be sort of looking at, and there's a video on the membership, but it's just a short take at a clinic where I was getting a horse to canter in a way without sort of chasing it, where I kind of led the horse through, and the horse found a canter, and I was helping the client do that. Now, that is one way of getting a horse to sort of start to travel and without having to constantly have something behind it driving it. Now, driving pressure done in the wrong way will cause a horse to think to the outside, because it looked to the inside to run away from something, then it looks to the outside because it's kind of seeking refuge, because the pressure that drove it out there bothered it enough to feel like it needs to seek refuge. So then the person in the middle can tend to spend a lot of their time trying to get that horse's focus, purely because the way they sent it out, the horse was tending to want to focus to the outside because of its, the escape frame of mind it had when it left the person. So, when you start this exercise, you've just got it like a really simple exercise that I do, and it's good because I get to walk a little bit, but I don't have to run. So if you can get a bit of exercise yourself as a person, it's funny. To start this lesson, but it's just a leading lesson where I'll have a long rope available, probably about a 10 mil opposed to a 12 to 13 mil lead rope that's not as light and flimsy, I guess, as a lunge rein, but it wouldn't matter if you used a lunge rein either. But you just get the horse and you walk forward and you get the horse to lead up beside you and just get him to trot past you, just, and get him really soft in the lead to trot past. Until when you pick up that leading hand, you pick up the feel in that rope, that horse will just travel past nice. And then when they travel past, you can send them out on a straight line and they'll trot out, and then you might put a corner in to start to build a circle or something like that. Now, that's a really good way to get a horse to trot out. And then as it trots out, you can start to turn. Say if your horse was on your right-hand side, you could start to walk to the left, and the horse will trot and start to do an arc around you. And after a while, you get to a stage that you might only have to sort of just gently walk around like a truck tire size, and if your horse lags a little bit, you just put a leading feel up that rope and that horse will just sort of trot up. And that's a good way to get a horse started and understand the leading hand. So you're starting it close, and it doesn't take too long. Like sometimes I've sort of, you know, had it within, you know, on a pretty green horse, it trotting around, following a leading hand within sort of, you know, 20 minutes or so. Others might be more difficult and need more leading because they're braced. So once they're leading good, you can really pick up that lead and lead them, and they're going to float really well. So when they're out on a longer line, then what you're starting to do is, when I step up with that leading feel and I step up a little bit, the horse is to move forward in front of the leading hand, kind of thing. And that's what you were teaching it when you were close to it. Step in front of that leading hand, and they see that as a lift forward thing. And then when they start to walk, you can just lift them, and they'll start to trot forward. So that's a good way of getting them out on a circle without having to kind of just hold them up with driving pressure all the time. If you were going to do a 40-minute session with a horse, I would put some transitions in it instead of just trotting around for 40 minutes, because, you know, it's very hard to, you know, have a conversation going and just let the horse trot and try to keep it sort of focused on a circle and things like that without it kind of maybe zoning out a little bit. So I would definitely add a few, and transitions are still good, you know, because as far as, if you're going to be out there for 40 minutes with your horse and just see his exercise, well, it's not a good thing. I think you can still do exercise, and transition is good in exercise anyway. So you might sort of, you know, maybe get your horse to come back to a walk for a few steps and then trot it out, maybe trot some circles. Something I would also look at when your horse is out on a long line, you know, is doing some straight lines and some corners, and feed it out on a straight line and then put a corner in, so the horse is following the feel of the inside rein. If you spend too long on a circle just with that inside rope dangling as that horse is running around, you run the risk of the horse not taking the inside rein seriously and starting to just go, oh, the weight of that rein's there, but I'll just kind of dribble off and think out there somewhere. So I think it's important in that exercise that you're actually, doing some corners to the inside, letting your horse out, so you can let it out on a straight line through the field of the inside rein. You can steer it back in again, and use that exercise to get a bit of balance, and then, as I say, slow down, speed up. Now, another thing to think about, the driving pressure is when we constantly pushing on our horses and they look at the pressure and move away. But if you had a flag in the middle, for instance, and you lifted your leading hand and your horse didn't listen, you could pop that flag on your leg or something, create a bit of, you know, just that bit of awareness in the air, and that horse will probably step up and trot. And you can probably use that if the horse fell out of a gate that it was in. You could just gently pop that flag, and it'll go, whoop, up, step up. But you got to be careful you're not kind of using it just to push around. Around, because that's when the horse will, you know, it won't be good for your horse. So a leading lesson to get them to lead out is always a good one. Once they're out there, more transitions, straight line steering, you can keep that trot going, but as long as you do some more little slow downs and speed ups in it, the horse will still get that exercise, but the mind will be sort of more interactive. And you know, maybe look at your 40 minutes and you might do break it up a little, as in, don't just do 40 straight of trotting. You might just do so much trotting, a little bit of, you know, walk exercise, some steering, and then back to trotting, and then just to keep the mind keep that conversation and that dance happening with your horse. Thank you for the question.
Okay, Mark, I've got a question from Erica, which is a bit of a tricky question, and it brings up a conflict which I think a lot of us come across at some point. She's really interested in the intersection between consent and pressure. She says we want consent, or not the nose, from our horses while training them, but how can they learn new things that may be slightly scary or uncomfortable at first without feeling some sort of pressure or stress? My assumption is that we can't always expect a yes to a new scary thing. She read an article recently discussing how you never put horses under any pressure means that they can't learn and they can't become accustomed to new situations. And yet another one discussed how no's lead to issues. Can you please discuss this?
I particularly, I mean, I like all questions, but I particularly like this one because I guess it's been on my mind lately, and I've noticed people coming to clinics, it's been on their mind as well. So, because I just actually did a clinic where this subject has kind of come up. It's about the balance of everything, and that saying in horsemanship, that old saying is feel, timing, and balance. And my take is balance is the scales of balance, not how the horse balances or we would balance on a tightrope or something like that. Though you could say the word balance twice, because you could talk about physical balance, where the horse is balanced well and moving well and things like that. But I think that saying feel, timing, and balance is those scales, because it's how much we do one thing, how well we get a horse to listen to us, but how well can we get that horse to think away and understand the environment that it's going into, and an awareness in that horse, how many times we back up, to how many times we go forward, how many times we move the hind quarter, to how many times we move the fore quarter. It's all about balance. And then that creates good balance in our horses, mental balance, physical balance. I know there's a lot of stuff out there, and I say it too, ask your horse a yes question. Now that's important in setting up horses to be interested in you. And I'll just give you a quick short scenario on that. And it's one I sort of use commonly. It's like you walk in, a wild horse can look at you. Okay. So all you have to do is set up a situation where it can look at you and reward it. So you've asked your horse a yes question because you knew the horse could look at you. Once a horse can look at you, a horse is going to tend to go towards his thoughts eventually. So basically you set it up so the horse, with a bit of draw or whatever, so that horse might take a step towards you, and you kind of reward it for that. So you've only asked the horse questions that were yes questions, okay? But it's not all yes questions. When horses, so pressure's an interesting thing. Now, there's negative reinforcement and there's negative reinforcement. Now, in some negative reinforcement, I think people rely on moving their boundaries and pressures towards their horse and adding more pressure till the horse yields. So it's almost like set up to be a no question. But horse training's not without pressure. Pressure is something that there is a bit of stuff out there, and I know and I can understand it, but this is a holistic sort of, I want people to be very holistic with their training, in the sense that you're not just, introducing a naive young horse to education. I come across, and people have got horses with a lot of red flags from a seriously, bad past. And so we've got to be really holistic about this and say, okay, it's pressure that sometimes put the horse there. Sometimes it's pressure that'll get them out of there. I think sometimes when they see a horse that's been shut down or under pressure, and that's why it's like it is, that we remove all the pressure and then hopefully interact with that horse and listen to it. And then the horse is going to come out of its shell and, suddenly be a nice horse and friendly again and suddenly trust people. But the reality is sometimes if pressure got them in there, there is pressure that will get them out. And sometimes it's more effective because you've given the horse the answer that it never had when it was under pressure. But it's how we apply those pressures and where that horse sees the pressure coming from, I think, is one of the biggest things. So going back to, I like to sort of set it up so we just arrange the furniture. Now, what I mean by arrange the furniture is we're just arranging the boundaries and the no-go areas and things like that to set a horse up to search and find the answer, okay? So a lesson like that, you might have seen me on a video do, which is probably the easiest lesson to sort of, say, okay, this is how I apply pressure and get a horse to search. So basically horses have to know what no means, see? So, if you just think, it's all about asking yes questions, people get so frazzled going, oh no, how do I ask a yes question all the time? And they get really sort of worried about trying to find, 100 yes questions that horse is going to answer in training. Well, horses constantly searching within an environment of pressure and release in their own environment, and they come across no's a lot, in the sense of they might walk up to another horse if they didn't read its sign, to say, I don't want to scratch, or I don't want anything to do with you, or I don't want your hay, then that other horse is going to say no. But if you provide the no's more as boundaries, as in the horse goes, well, I've tried this, that's no, but I'll try this, that's yes. Okay, so in training, there is areas where boundaries are no, like a no-go area. A no-go area might be you pick up a feel on a rein and the horse leans on the rein. Well, you ask the horse to see if it would follow a feel and it leant. So the pressure only applied on that horse when it leant into the reins. So it pushed into a boundary and then it rethought that. So next time when you pick up on the reins, you might have a positive thought backwards, but you allowed the horse to try that forward thought and push a little to make it felt like it was finding its own boundaries, opposed to you pushing the boundary on the horse. So that's a way of sort of applying boundaries. And yeah, of course the reins said no. They did say no. You know, to try and set it up always as yes, then when the horse does accidentally find a big no when it's under pressure, in an environment that we can't control, then it will get a bit frazzled. So another question would be, now this is providing anxiety, because I use anxiety as a stimulant, and it's, people might say, oh, you make your horse anxious to train it, and it's like no, I'm not, I'm just setting the horse up with enough to search most times. With horses that have red flags, then I may deliberately put them in a place that they've never found the answer, and very quickly say, here is an answer that you might be able to follow that's going to make you feel a lot better. And then they see me and my questions, my the pathways that I offer as something that's good, instead of the pathways I offer as something that's bad. So that's like a neutral anxiety. So going back to something I do quite commonly, I might wave a flag, the horse goes, oh, that's a flag, I'm scared of that. But to me, in my mind, that flag's not connected to me. I'm not going to chase the horse with the flag. I'm not going to say, hey, you didn't listen to me, get away from the flag. I've just waved the flag to say, hey, there's a mob of emus running around, are you aware? And the horse goes, yeah, there's a mob of emus running around, but there's not. The flag is kind of like that natural stimulant. So obviously we can't find anxiety organically all the time. So what I mean is, you know, when you're out in the paddock, well, it's organic, it's there, like there's a kangaroo, there's something over there. But in a learning environment, we have to stimulate that little bit of anxiety to get our horses to find answers. So what we're going to do is we're going to wave that flag, horse goes, oh, I'm not sure what to do. And then we might have a feel of a rein, just enough, or like a lead rope on it, and that horse will go, oh, I've leant back, that's not working, I'll step forward, that's working. So through anxiety, the horse has searched into a boundary and then found it feels better when it comes forward off that boundary, because I might remove that anxiety a little bit. So it goes, oh, following the feel of the rein made me feel better. It released that bit of brace I had, it released that fear, and I thought through a situation, now I feel better. And in that moment, the horse controlled the flag a little bit, in the sense that when it moved forward off that pressure, the flag quietened down a bit, so the kangaroo stopped bouncing a little bit. But what happens in the real world is we're just trying to change a horse's thought. So the best thing we get good at is, it's sometimes people think the rein's about always getting the horse to come back to us, or so the rein's more to me is to get the horse to look, think in a direction, but more importantly, before the horse thinks in the direction, to break a hard thought. But when the horse finds a boundary and thinks in a new direction, it breaks a hard thought, so then it feels better automatically. So in training, yes, we have to provide areas of anxiety in there, as long as the pathway that made the horse feel better was the pathway that we offered it. And I'm going to say this is what I say to a lot of people is, if you train like this, I'm going to start with one, and then I'm going to go to two, and then I'm going to go to three, and then I'm going to four, and then I'm going to have five, and then I'm going to the flag. If you do it in that order, then the horse thinks that one is a pathway to trouble. Okay, but what I just explained to you then, I made the trouble first enough to get the horse searching, and then I asked with the feel of one, and the horse followed the feel of one. It might have pushed itself and created two in friction, But basically, one was the answer to a better feeling. But if you say, I'm going to ask with the rope, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do this, then that rope and that one is a pathway that trouble could be coming. So that sets a horse up for no thoughts all the time, sets a negative thing up. So both of those situations provide anxiety, but only one of them provides the horse with a pathway that says, I've helped myself think through anxiety, and it made our ideas feel like a really good idea opposed to an idea that, oh, something's around the corner that's worse. So I hope that, yeah. It's easy to get a little off track on these questions because my mind goes off on these little things, and I hope you get clarity out of that. But if you got 50% clarity, then maybe you can ask another question on the bits you missed, maybe in a fortnight.
Okay, I've got a final question here from Helen. I think what Helen is wanting to know is how to limit the anxiety she causes by going to interrupt her horse's thoughts when they're out in the paddock eating really nice juicy grass. So she's noticed that she can go up to them in the paddock and they pay no interest in her at all. So maybe she slaps her leg with the rope and they might look at her for a second, but then they go back to eating grass. And when she's taking them for a walk in hand on the roadside, if she gives them a signal to let them eat grass, then when it's time for them to actually go, and she'll ask them and let them know that it's time to go, she'll sometimes see that she sees them eat faster as she approaches them. And she's wondering if that's anxiety related. So she's wondering how she can deal with eating grass scenarios. And she's obviously trying to limit the anxiety.
Don't be too hard on yourself. I say to a lot of people, don't be hard on yourself. I know you're not being hard on yourself. You're wanting to, you know, but it's good to look into things. But I often, you know, if a horse has got its head down and doesn't want to pay attention to you when you're walking up to it because the grass is nicer, well, it's a horse. And sometimes I relate horses to, you know, I have a little joke because I had a clinic just recently where there was two different toddlers, and it was so fun just watching the toddlers toddle around the clinic. And one particular one, you know, they come from sort of out west, so they're pretty happy with their kids, you know, rolling around in the sand out in the middle of the arena while the clinic's going on. And it doesn't bother me at all, as long as that kid's in a safe spot, and, you know, that's fine, and they're over there. And just watching the toddlers just made me think about horses and, you know, oh, there's a cat. Oh, the cat's got a moving tail. I might go and pull it. Oh, what's that over there? Oh, I'm going to wander over there, because I watched this little toddler wander around doing all these things. And all he did was just go towards his thoughts all the time. And horses, oh, that's what they do. They, ooh, what are they doing? I'm going to wander around. Ooh, this grass is good. Oh, I might eat this grass here. And things like that. And we sometimes get so, you know, caught up on the relationship and the things that we're having with our horses that we sort of get a little bit of, oh, no, my horse is eating grass and it didn't look at me. You know, but nor does a toddler, but they love you. You know, sometimes they're not going to listen to you because they were more interested in something else. And don't be, now I'd say to everyone, don't be hard on yourself for a horse being a horse. Just remember, you know, kids, parenting and horsemanship is, you know, there's two things in there that is much the same as is that, there's times when the horse knows that what's better and what's worse. Now, what I say to people who get a little bit upset because their horse maybe didn't pay attention to them or something like that, I said, I know your horse likes you. It just may not like education at the moment, okay? And I think kids are like that too, is they love you, but they just don't like it when you have to sit down and do their schoolwork or something because they'd rather be out playing or something like that. And that's why in our journey to be better horse people is to work our horses in a way that keep them horses and keep them thinking and stimulate them in a way that doesn't just kind of make them just feel like they have to sit at that table and do that. But ice cream, schoolwork, you know, it's kind of one of those things. I'd eat quick just to get the ice cream down, so I knew I got all my ice cream in, okay? Now, if your horses have used to being, you know, and a lot of people's horses are used to feed times and feed and things like that, and whereas horses that eat out in the paddock all the time, I don't think they'd suddenly go, well, I've got to have this bit of extra grass before I go, because they'd have no need to do that because they know it's always available. So you can change their thought very quickly, knowing that they're not thinking they're going to, you know, wait another 3 hours before next feed or something like that. And, you know, and you've just, you know, like everyone, you know, we've gone through drought, you know, really bad drought where the horses have only been hand fed, and you know, here we've had enough country to run them on. So, and I know what part of it, you know, where you're from a bit, and I see what our times there where food was scarce and there's lots of green grass around, and now you've got to be careful because the horses be on the green grass too long and they're foundering and things like that, so they get taken off the grass. So don't be worried that your horse eats a bit quick and gets a bit anxious, because it's probably saying, oh, I better get this bit in because I don't know when the next bit's going to be. So don't sort of look at the connection you're having with your horse and be too disheartened. More so just the fact that maybe it could be just an environmental situation that's just the way it is. Now, going to help you out, so instead of just talking about all that, I'm trying to give you some ideas to help you out. When you go down the paddock, don't expect your horses to sort of look up just because you've come over there. Maybe just go and wait a little and just be around them a little and join them for a little while before you expect anything. And then they might just come up for you, you know, oh, hello. Yeah, righto. What are you doing? And get interested. But if you're sort of walking to them and expecting them to lift their head because you're coming over, well, maybe they're not interested in that at the moment. Maybe they're still interested in eating grass. If you saw you were walking towards your horses and they ate faster and suddenly got a little anxious, well, you could think that there is an anxiety of you coming over. Now, don't be hard on yourself and say, you know, but some people, maybe it is the person that they're scared of, and they start to show tension or graze a bit harder or something like that or whatever, then sometimes it could be just knowing that you're going to take them away from that grass. But so just stop a bit and just wait and just wait till they sort of, nothing's happening, I'll just eat a bit soft, and then just work your way in as if you were catching a young horse and stopping every time it got a little bit tense. And then but otherwise, just while they're grazing out there, just go and spend a bit of time around them and just not make a big deal of it. And then, you know, you might put your hand on their rump while they're grazing and just stand there if they've allowed you there and stuff like that, and just be around them, and then they might just gently pick their head up and interact with you a little bit, and their mind will come off the grass. Then you might just catch them and walk away. It might take a little longer, but it might be just a good thing. And you know, you don't have, you know, there used to be this thing, you know, when, you know, people started doing a bit of horsemanship when it first got sort of big, and you know, especially the, you know, the 1, 2, 3, 4 kind of horsemanship, where almost you had to walk in the gate and, you know, tap your leg and the horse had to trot up to you, and you weren't a good horseman. And really, that was just sort of saying, hey, that was just basically using obedience to get a horse to come to you, not just a soft connection. But go and meet your horse out in the paddock, spend that little bit, a few minutes out there with them while they're grazing. That connection will come together again, and you might find you'll just catch your horse and walk away. In regarding walking down the road, when you're walking down the road and your horse eats a little harder, there are times that I show people when, you know, and I think it's happening because of what I said at the start of the answer, is could be just because of a lot of situations of limited time on grass and stuff like that. But when I walk off, I walk off, and it's important in training. So if your horse hasn't picked its head up, I'll just walk off with the lead. I won't turn around and wait and ask and things like that. I will walk off and I'll lift the horse long enough lead rope to feel the lead coming, to know that what the answer is. So don't just walk off and snap it by the head. That'd be a pretty rude interruption, and that wouldn't be nice for the horse. But you leave a long enough lead that the horse knows the length of the lead, and if you've taught your horse the length of the lead and feel and stuff like that, it knows that lead's picking up. If it doesn't come up with that lead, then basically there'll be a brace in there, then the horse will go, oh, okay, I better come with the lead. But it's kind of like, don't look back, just walk off, because that's how, what, like, so when you watch horses, there'll be one grazing and one will walk off, and that might be the one that they kind of want to follow for a certain reason, but one might just hang and graze a bit longer, and then it'll go, oh, geez, they're going, and it'll pick its head up and might try and catch up or something like that. But the one that led out there didn't have a union meeting and say, hey, everybody, we've got to go, I'm going to wait, and you know, till you're ready and let's go. So in those situations, especially when I'm out on the road leading and stuff like that, when I walk off, I walk off, and I guess the end of the rope is the bit to say, hey, you better come with me with that rope, because we're still teaching our horses to understand the rein and not never to pull back and things like that. So that's how I treat that matter there. And they, if they want to eat, if they want to take three bites while that rope's picking up, so be it. But you've walked off, and if you make those walk off decisions like that, the horse sees you make a decision. You're not trying to wake it up, you know. Like I guess what I'm trying to say to people, to become leaders, teachers don't always become leaders. And I see people getting so caught up in the teaching part of horsemanship, they're constantly teaching their horses, and by teaching their horses, they've lost their leadership to say, hey, I'm going, your choice to come. Okay? So, and they've got to look like they believe in themselves. So what I'm saying to you, you've got to look believable. If you just sort of turn around and say, I'm going, then the horse goes, no, you're not, because you're looking at me. Okay, you're not going. Well, yes, I am. I'm looking that way and I'm going that way. Intention is a very powerful thing in horse training, and it's very important that though you can still learn about education and teaching, don't become a teacher and an observer so much so that you lose your leadership. So yeah, Helen, I hope that helps. And also, Helen, sorry you didn't make the clinic. And actually, for the few on, that's Corona for you. But anyway, I'll be back in Victoria again, and we'll see again. So, is there any more questions?
That's it for this fortnight. Thanks to the members for sending through the questions. Any online member can ask Mark a question. He'll do his best to answer them in these sessions. Online members have access to over 300 training videos, and it's just $15 a month. So if you like these podcasts, please like them, leave a comment. We do read the comments. It's great for us to hear how they've helped. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, everybody.